This week, the House is scheduled to vote on a Republican tax cut for small businesses. It's just the latest piece of legislation aimed at helping small businesses, which are widely praised in the political discourse as engines of job creation. As NPR's Tamara Keith reports, small business adoration is nearly universal and reflects something beyond economic reality.
There are many things politicians disagree about, but one thing they agree on is the value of small businesses. And they love, love, love to talk about them. Here are President Obama, Mitt Romney, and House Majority Leader Eric Cantor.
Small businesses create 2 out of every 3 jobs in this country, so our recovery depends on them.
And so my job, if I'm president, among other things, is to make sure that we are the best place in the world for small business.
We should all be able to rally around the cause of small businesses.
How much do politicians love small business? The phrase appeared in the congressional record more than 10,000 times in just the past 2 years. That's according to the Sunlight Foundation Capital Words database. That's less than members of Congress talked about taxes, but far more references than they made to the debt limit, for instance. And there's a reason.
Small business owners always the good guy in the movies.
Frank Luntz is a language specialist and a GOP pollster.
Being a small business owner is the American dream. It's the epitome of success. People respect that individual.
Americans may have mixed feelings about big business and Wall Street, but Luntz says they identify with small business and Main Street.
I've tested language. I've tested small business owner, job creator, innovator, entrepreneur, and nothing tests better than small business owner, because it represents all of those. It represents someone willing to take a risk. It represents hard work and perseverance.
So perhaps it's no wonder that more than a quarter of the people running for the state legislature or Congress in California this June listed themselves on the ballot as business people or small business owners. And in some cases, it's a stretch, says Alan Hoffenblum, publisher of the California Target book and a former Republican political consultant.
There's a state senator seeking re-election in a tough election, but he's not putting state senator under his name. He's putting businessman under his name.
In all, 48 people list themselves as small business owners, with 160 making sure business is somewhere in their 3-word max job description. Hoffenblum says it's all about sending a message.
So he says, I'm not one of them, you know, the politicians. I've had life experiences. I met a payroll. It's a type of ballot designation that appeals, you know, to the voter.
And it's just one more manifestation of what has been a longstanding political tradition of giving a lot of love to the little guy. But this intense focus on small businesses may overstate the economic case. Big businesses actually employ far more people than small ones. And according to government data, the overwhelming majority of small businesses don't employ anyone at all. The figure often cited by politicians on both sides of the aisle, that 65% of net new jobs are created by small businesses, that one is true. But there's more to it.
That masks a huge amount of people being hired and let go.
Kelly Edmiston is a senior economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. He says small business jobs are far less stable than jobs at big businesses, in part because small businesses are created and also fail at such a high rate.
They're much more volatile jobs, so there's simply not the security there.
And Edmiston says small businesses tend to offer lower pay and fewer benefits.
Small businesses are important job creators. But I don't think we want a economy made up totally of small businesses.
But before you think Edmiston is some kind of small business hater, he actually concludes that in terms of economic development, it makes far more sense for states and cities to promote small business than to spend tons of money to try and lure a large factory into town. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. The financial turmoil in Europe has died down for now. Interest rates have fallen from the highs they reached last November. At the European Central Bank, officials believe they have contained the crisis. But investors still get nervous when they see a sign of trouble, like the recent rise of interest rates in Spain. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports from Frankfurt.
Only a few months ago, it seemed as if Europe would collapse under the weight of its own debt, dragging down the rest of the world's economies with it.
The markets were stressful, fears were in the air, and our operations eliminated that risk from the table.
That is Victor Constancio, vice president of the European Central Bank, sitting at his conference table in his office high above Frankfurt. The ECB is something like the Federal Reserve, but with fewer powers and a narrower mandate. For a long time, it was criticized for taking a passive approach to the financial crisis, but Esther Faya, professor of economics at Goethe University, says, like other central banks, it has finally gotten a grip on the crisis.
The policymakers throughout the world have been much more flexible and activist, and this is good. I mean, it's definitely the right response when there is a panic.
The ECB has done this in several ways.
This one.
Real estate agent Peter Talkenberger opens an apartment door in the north end of Frankfurt. The ECB has brought interest rates way down, and in some cities in Germany, prices of homes like this one have risen as much as 20% in less than 2 years.
It's very hot. The house we are standing in, everything is sold. But if I had a house like this with, I think it has 6 apartments on the market, I think it would be sold within 2 weeks.
In that regard, Germany is something of an outlier. Most other European countries are seeing flat or falling house prices. But just as in the United States, the low interest rates are giving a level of support to real estate prices. More significantly, the ECB has lent more than €1 trillion to its banks in what are called long-term refinancing operations. Constancio says many banks suffered from severe liquidity constraints at the beginning of the year. With credit markets stalled, they couldn't borrow the money they needed to keep operating. Now, as a result of the ECB's moves, many are able to sell bonds and lend money.
All that are signs and results and effects of our operations of providing liquidity to the banks.
But Constancio acknowledges that the ECB still faces challenges and pitfalls. With elections coming up in countries such as France and Greece, the tough austerity measures advocated by European officials will face a new political test. Last month, Spain's interest rates spiked after the new prime minister talked about making unilateral changes in its austerity program. Constancio says he doesn't believe Spain will renege on its promises.
It's a commitment that has been taken by the country, and we certainly expect that the country will respect that agreement.
Europe also is widely expected to be headed for a recession. As incomes fall, there is the risk that many banks will be unable to borrow the money they need. That could mean another long-term refinancing operation. Constancio doesn't want to address whether such a move is likely, but he does suggest that it isn't needed right now.
Well, the size of our LTROs have been sizable enough, I would say. And so banks have really a liquidity situation, which is now, I would say, comfortable.
Like the Fed, the ECB has navigated the financial crisis so far, but each week seems to bring another potential disaster. And that means no one at the ECB or elsewhere can afford to take a bow yet. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, Frankfurt.
Tomorrow, the House is scheduled to vote on a GOP measure to cut taxes on small businesses. But what exactly is a small business? Small suggests a handful of employees, a shop, maybe a restaurant or a little tech firm. Well, it turns out the reality of the nation's 28 million small businesses is in many cases quite different. NPR's Tamara Keith has this look at what counts as a small business and just who would be helped by the House tax cut.
House Republicans say their tax cut would help millions of small businesses. Eric Cantor is the majority leader and author of the bill.
This is a bill which will directly help small businesses create jobs.
The total cost of the one-year measure is $46 billion, an analysis commissioned by a pro-GOP outside group and now posted on Cantor's website, says if the tax cut only lasts for 1 year, it will create 40,000 jobs. Some quick back-of-the-envelope math puts that at more than $1 million per job. NPR asked House Speaker John Boehner whether that was cost effective.
I think we expected it would create far more jobs than that. But small businesses who file as individuals, as I did in my business, face enormous challenges. And rather than paying these taxes, that money could stay in their business to help them buy more equipment, hire more workers, and expand their business.
Eric Cantor's bill would not help me at all.
That's Seattle small business owner McKinney Howell. Technically, the tax cut might help her a little. With her family, Howell owns a mini mart, a vegan sandwich wholesale business, and a small group of vegan restaurants.
So we're headed upstairs to Plum. It is Monday night.
Plum is one of Howell's restaurants. It's a bistro, serving upscale health food without any of the crunchy ambiance.
Hi, guys!
All told, Howell has about 30 employees.
It was great to open up and to be able to create like 25 more jobs than were there and to become a viable part of the neighborhood that we're in. That was awesome.
Less awesome are the company's profits at the end of the year because their margins are thin and so much gets poured back into the business.
The reality is you make $25,000, my income has decreased steadily since I became a small business owner.
Under the bill from House Republicans, small business owners, businesses with fewer than 500 employees, would be able to deduct 20% from their business income, with some exceptions. For Howell, the tax savings would work out to a few hundred bucks.
I mean, for a business like mine, if you just do the math, it's not going to help.
It's not like she'd turn down the extra cash, but it certainly wouldn't be enough to hire anyone else or to make a major equipment purchase. Much larger firms and much more profitable companies would get most of the tax benefit, says Joe Rosenberg of the Tax Policy Center.
Your typical small business, what we might think of as your mom and pop store, is probably not going to see much benefit from this tax provision. The largest benefits go to larger businesses that report a lot of income.
Although the image of a small business owner is someone like Howell, under the Small Business Administration definition used by the House bill, a business with 499 employees could also be considered small. Some 99.9% of the businesses in the country are small by this definition. And according to SBA data, the vast majority of them, more than 20 million firms, don't employ a single person other than the owner.
My name is Angela Kerrigan, and I am the owner of a cupcake company.
She's also the pastry chef, marketing director, the whole thing. Last year, she made less than $1,000 baking gourmet cupcakes. But for her, it's not really about the money.
It's my way of sharing a little bit of smile and happiness with someone on their special day.
Like many people who report business income on their taxes, Kerrigan has another job. A full-time job. She wouldn't qualify for the tax cut because businesses are required to have employees to take advantage of it. So the full-time freelance photographer or independent consultant who works alone would be out of luck. Although the assumption is that many of these sole proprietors will reorganize their books and add a family member to the payroll to get in on the tax break. Tamara Keith, NPR News, The Capitol.
All Things Considered is a production of NPR News, which is solely responsible for its content. You can connect with NPR and your favorite member station, wherever you are. Get the NPR app for your mobile device. You can also lean back and enjoy NPR.org, optimized for the iPad. This is NPR.